What a gift to be able to be back with you. I was just speaking to a man named John who's here for the first time, and we both agreed what a great environment to be able to talk and to share with open-minded people from many different backgrounds, traditions, and life experiences. So I'd like to begin with a blessing for you, for all of us, that comes from St. Paul in his second letter to the Corinthians, chapter 1, verse 3. He says, "Praise be God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all consolation. He comforts us in all our afflictions and thus enables us to comfort those who are in trouble with the same consolation we have received from Him. As we have shared much in the suffering of Christ, so through Christ do we share abundantly in His consolation." I start with that passage because depending upon the translation, the word for mercies is often translated as compassion. And been asked to be able to talk about compassion in the Christian tradition. So let's start, as any good professor would do, with an explanation and of different terms, the word compassion. The word compassion comes from an old Latin word, or two different words that come together, and very simply it means to suffer with. To suffer with. But it's not in a passive way like the word patience. Okay? Patience. That's why we're called patients when we're in hospitals. We are suffering with the illness, suffering with the pain. But it's more than that. And it's even more than empathy. Compassion also implies not only a suffering with, but the same time, an active seeking to alleviate the suffering. So this is why it's different than pity, different than sympathy. Okay? Is that compassion means that you feel with the other and you would do your best to try and help alleviate that suffering, even if it's just some small way. So to speak about compassion in the Christian tradition, it opens up the Gospels in a rich and wonderful way. So let's start right at the very core of the Christian myth. Here's another word, myth. Okay? Myth does not mean that it's false. Unfortunately, there's a large segment of our society that says, "Oh, that's a myth," assumes that means it's false, or it's a lie, or it's a misconception. On the contrary, the ancient peoples remind us that a myth is a great truth, a great story. It's so important that it's cross-cultural, cross-religious lines, cross-class lines. It speaks to the human soul. And that's why it continues on. And any authentic myth continues to evolve over time, evolves with the listeners as they themselves apply the myth, the great story, to their life. So, for example, we have creation myths. We have goal myths. We also have myths that tell us where we're going to go when we die. Okay? There's a recognition that there's many of these different great stories that human beings love. As we're often told in the Jewish Talmud, that God loves stories so much that God created human beings. Because we are a storied people and we are story-making people. We never get tired of telling stories. So let's look at the great story, the great myth called Christianity. At its core, no matter whether you're looking from the evangelical perspective, the Protestant perspective, the Roman Catholic perspective, otherwise known as the Latin Rite, or the Orthodox perspective, all of them would agree in this, and that is that the key metaphor, the central symbol, is that of the cross or the crucifix. Why? A lot of Christians miss this, though, so I'm going to just say it in a sentence. Because this particular symbol invites us in to a very important and liberating truth. That is, that pain cannot be avoided. Rather, pain must be confronted in order to move us to transformation. That's the summary of the Christian myth. And that's why the cross is central to that. Why the cross? Because that is what Christ was crucified on. Now again, just to put this in the perspective of a social, political, historical venue, Remember, this is what the oppressors of that day and time, the Romans, used to be able to make a clear statement about those they considered to be rabble-rousers, criminals, etc. And they didn't do it privately. It wasn't done in a cell, wasn't done in a room or even a building. It was done outdoors. Is that these individuals that seemed to be against the Roman authorities were crucified in public and most often at crossroads. So that everyone who walked by could say, "Ooh, I'm not going to do whatever they did because I don't want to end up like that." That's why above the cross was a summary of what this person did. So that even strangers coming into this town would learn, in effect, this was an ugly, gruesome way they're learning what not to do. Okay? So as you know, the one that was put above his sign was Jesus Christ, King of the Jews. Okay? So one more time, what Jesus did, and this is why his work is salvific. All right? This is the key. There are some denominations that say Jesus saves us by his death and his resurrection. Actually, that's not true. That's not true. Because every human being is going to die. So he doesn't save us by his death. Here's again is the key fallout of this great teaching, is confronting not only pain in general, but pain personally, specifically to my life, to your life. And here it is. Jesus saves us by the way he lived, he died, and he rose. And how did he do that? Because he loved throughout his life. He loved even unto death. He loved trusting his Father. And that's what rose him up. And we are asked to do the same thing. That no matter what came his way, he continued to love. He continued to bless. He continued to forgive. He continued to affirm. He continued to liberate. He continued to open up. Now, you know, as I do, we reflect upon our own lives of pain. Very often we shut down. We turn away. We walk away. We curse. We hurt. We look for revenge. All those things that are less than being fully human, he didn't do any of that. He showed us a new way of being authentically human. This is the way of compassion from the Christian tradition. Is that no matter what comes your way, is that you are invited to continue to love. What does love look like? It means that you continue to see that even those who want to harm you, even those who want to betray you, abandon you, ridicule you, physically, emotionally, spiritually, sexually, psychologically harm you, at some level, they're in deep pain. Because that's not the essence of a true, authentic human being. And this is where the compassion comes from. Is that you can see beyond what they are doing to you or have done to you to realize, oh my gosh, you are suffering even more than I, knowing that you are hurting me in such a way or hurting this person. Now, for most of us, it's like, whoa, that is an overwhelming sense of love. Is it even possible? The answer is yes. It's lived out by any authentic human being. From the Christian perspective, this is why Karl Rahner, a very famous theologian in the Catholic tradition, said very simply that those who aren't Christian, when they live an authentic human life, are, he termed it, an anonymous Christian. Okay? That they're living out the authentic compassion of the message of Christ, but from their own tradition. Or maybe it's not even a religious tradition, it could be from a place of ethics. Okay? So once again, for Christians, salvation is not pain avoided, but pain confronted and transformed. That is the work of being human. This really was poignant for me about 10 years ago when I had a biking accident and I wrecked my shoulder and I had to go through physical therapy. And if any of you have been through physical therapy, you know that it gets boring, it's difficult, it's painful, you want to skip your appointments, all those things. Okay? And it's much like the way we deal with pain in our life. Well, one day I had a young man and I guess I wasn't doing the exercise the way that he wanted. And he said, "Sir, you have to lean into the pain." And I said, "Whoa, would you repeat that again?" He says, "Lean into the pain. If you want to get better, you got to lean into it. Don't just kiss it. Lean into it." Now, being me, I said, I stopped. I didn't want to do it right. I says, you know, thank you for that gift. You've made this whole morning worthwhile. What a great reflection on life. Lean into the pain. That's what Jesus did. Lean into your pain. Don't run from it. Don't deny it. Don't repress it. Don't medicate it. What is your pain? It's always there. Every human being, every creature suffers levels and layers of pain. So Jesus models for us this work of leaning into the pain. So the word that we use is called pondering, biblical pondering. And this process means it's similar to the mindfulness that the Buddhists practice, where you do a theological reflection on what's the meaning of this? What is God saying to me through this? Not, why am I always the one getting the ticket? Why am I always the one getting the red light? How come this always happens to me? People pick on me. I don't hear your story that way. That's the opposite of pondering. You know? Pondering is you take a step back and objectively, without judging it from a moral context, you just say, what's the meaning of this? Now, isn't that interesting how I behaved that way here and I did it differently over here? What are you trying to tell me, Lord? What's the lesson here? So it's a pondering. It's an invitation to lean in to that lesson, to learn from it, so that you might look at yourself, look at life differently. Okay? So to continue to love, no matter what comes our way, is the work, from the Christian believer, is the work of becoming authentically human. So let me give you the traditional five-step process, very practical, of how Christians are invited to do this. Okay? Or another way to say it is how we're invited to deal with pain. The pain of diminishment, the pain of being less than, the pain of growing older, the pain of suffering and illness, incompleteness of life, the pain of rejection, betrayal, abandonment, fill in the blank. There's so many levels and layers of pain. This five-step process is solemnly celebrated in what we call the higher religions. That just means religions that use ritual as an expression within the worship part of their celebration. That each of these are solemnly celebrated liturgically in the sanctuary, okay, to a greater or lesser degree. So the first one is called Good Friday. Good Friday. Have you ever wondered why we Christians use the term good in front of Friday? We don't use the term great in front of Easter. Isn't that interesting? It's called Good Friday because it's that point where our hubris, our great pride, our great sense that we don't need God, our great sense that I can do it all, is that it gets deflated. That we finally come to the point of recognizing I can't liberate myself. Or as we often say, I can't save myself. I can't set myself free. I need the help of others. That it's a community work, every one of us. Every one of us. So the Good Friday experience, what it teaches us is this. I'm going to go through this very slowly, each one of these five, because this is the core of this lesson about compassion. This is the day. Notice it's only a day. One day out of the whole year. This is the day where we honor tragedy. This is the day where we honor the pain of being human. This is the day where we honor the brokenness of the human condition. This is the day we finally respect that we are not God. We are creatures. And we stand with all of creation in this one day, and we are shown how to do this by the way we worship on this day. From the Catholic perspective, here's how we do it. We spend the day in silence. If you go to a Good Friday service at a Catholic church that knows how to do it well, there are great periods of silence. Great periods of silence. Because the mystery is so deep, no words can capture it. You know when you've grieved over the loss of a loved one, no matter what people say to you, it's like, can you just be quiet? Just give me a hug. Just weep with me, but don't give me any words. Okay? So that's what it's honoring the place of silence, which is the first language of God. Secondly, as we listen to the great story, the tragic story of the good one, the great one, the Son of God. Now, why is this so important? Because his story teaches us that whenever love comes into our midst, we will crucify it. You ever think about that? Whenever love comes into your life, you and I are going to distrust it to begin with. It's too good. It's too real. You don't know who I am. You know. But that's what Good Friday reminds us of. That whenever innocence comes into our life, we will torture it. We'll put it to death. We will make it suffer as we have suffered. This is what the Christian myth reminds us of. And that's why it's just so overwhelming and moves it to tears when you really get it. We want to say, oh no, I would never do that. We've all done it. We've all done it. Dare I say to you, think of your parenting years. How times you felt so guilty and ashamed. I just talked to a man the other day. He said, Father, I'm so ashamed. My oldest son, 3 times I can think of my life where I was way, way too rough on him. Way too rough. And there were parts of me that came out that it wasn't about him at all. That's what we're talking about. Okay? This is also the way that we deal with tragedy and deal with brokenness. We not only listen to the story, then we receive communion. Why? Because of what Walter Brueggemann says. That when we have a serious conversation, it's meant to lead us to a blessed communion. You see? Or putting it in more popular parlance, when we talk about the real things of life, the real things of what human beings will live and die for, that's what moves us to blessed communion. And why we have this blessed communion. The only day for Catholics there's no Mass. It's what we call a communion service. And finally, front and center, there you have it, the cross. And not only that, this is reminiscent of the Hebrew Scriptures, where every Catholic is asked, come forward and kiss the cross. Or officially, in liturgical documents, come forward and reverence the cross. I'm always edified to see what Catholics do with the cross. Some kind of touch it as if it's infectious. You know, other people come and give it a quick kiss. Others literally embrace the whole cross and hold it. Some are moved to tears. Okay? But it's a symbol of not just embracing what Christ has done for us, but are you willing to embrace your life, your cross, the responsibility of being human? So, from the Christian perspective, this is how we ponder that mystery. Now, here's the key, and this is what Jesus did, and he teaches us. Is that Jesus didn't just ponder upon the mysteries of which he proclaimed, the good news. He also filtered out whatever was given to him that he knew had nothing to do with him. He filtered it out, and he gave back something different. If he was cursed, he gave back a blessing. If he was physically attacked, he forgave. Okay? And in his own agony and struggle, he continued to bless and to heal. Think of the servant's ear that was cut off. He healed one more time. Okay? These are reminders that he continued to love even unto death. We too are invited to ponder the different moments and aspects in our life, and to filter it out so we give others something different. We call it, though, take a time out. Or I need to think about this. This is why St. Paul says, don't forgive too quickly. Okay? But we're all given the commandment to forgive, to go through the process. So this is the same understanding, just different language that we use today. Okay? So often, when people have heard us, they say, well, you know, I'm sorry. If you're not ready to forgive them, don't say they're forgiven. Because it's a lesson for the two of you, how deeply hurt you've been. Okay? So let me just pause here. And would you just close your eyes for a moment? Where in your life is God inviting you to ponder? To ponder the lessons of your own pain, your own suffering. And how is God inviting you to filter out that pain so that you can give back something different, something more mature? In a short phrase, Good Friday is about letting go to your undue attachment to your pain. Repeat that. It's about letting go of your undue attachment to pain. If you don't do it, then you'll wear pain like a suit of armor. You will over-identify with it. You will lose perspective of what it means to be God's beloved. And we've all done it. From the way we introduce ourselves, the way we carry our body, the stories we tell about ourselves. So it's a good way to check, are you clear? Are you clear about who you are? Do you see that your own story of pain is just a story? It's not a myth. It's a story. It's a part of the great myth of your life. Okay? Or do you find yourself living, as what we say amongst our Catholic assembly, living as a Good Friday Christian? Meaning your whole spirituality is wrapped up just in this one day. So those are questions that I would offer you for your own time of reflection. So let's move to the second step. Think of this as like five spokes in a wheel, or five acts in a play, or five courses in a wonderful gourmet banquet being served to you, not only by the Creator, but by reality. Okay? It's not that God causes these things. God is an active participant with us, working with us, inviting us, assisting us, accompanying us along the movement. And God's Spirit is always about movement. Okay? So the second one is Easter Sunday. Easter Sunday. Now notice, Easter Sunday is more than just a single day. Actually, according to the Christian reading of reality, it's 50 days. 50 days. This lets you know that authentic Christianity really is a faith about living in joy. It's a joyous faith. But many, many thousands of Christians do not live joyously. They live sad-faced. In fact, Teresa of Avila was famous for this. She's a doctor in the church. One of her sisters was walking around the convent very sour-faced all the time. And she stopped her and says, "Sister, do you believe in Jesus?" "Well, of course, Mother. Yeah, of course I do. Would you please inform your face?" There is no room for negativity or pessimism in an active, vibrant life with Christ. Either you do trust God, either you do believe that God holds you, God accompanies you, or you don't. And so I would dare say that many of us, even though we've received the sacraments and know the Bible backwards and forwards, we really don't get the great myth that is Christianity. Because Easter Sunday reminds us that we have been given something brand new. Brand new. And it's the awareness that behind every winter of our life is always a spring. Period. Behind every experience of suffering is always another surprise. Another gift. Another new opening. Always new life. Not just some of the time. It might work for me. Who knows? No. The promise is always. So 50 days we are given. It's not just about celebrating the joy. It's about learning how to receive the gift. The gift of new life. Because you know as I do, many of us, man, we're great givers. You know, givers to this charity, givers to someone who needs our time, or our talent, or our insight, or a listening ear, oh, happy to do that. It's much harder to sit back and let people love us. Let people give to us what they feel like we need. So we're given 50 days to learn how to receive the greatest gift you're ever going to receive, and that is new life. Not just once, but over and over and over again. Because sometimes, here's the undue attachment again, no matter what we say, we still want to hold on to the old life, or we want to repair it, or remodel it, or rename it. We don't want to move out. God says, come on, I got this mansion for you. I got this new place we're going to go. Or you're going to let go of your attachment to this sin or this addiction or this behavior, and let's get used to it. So this is terribly deceiving. And again, this is where we would say from our Christian perspective where the lies of the demons around us can really pull us down. To believe that, you know, you're not that. You're not that at all. You can only give away to another that which you've truly received. Now here's where compassion begins to come in. If you have not done the first step well, and we Catholics are famous for we love to suffer. We love that word sacrifice. You know, offer it up. Give me more to offer up. You see? We major in Good Friday. And we don't even minor in Easter Sunday. It's kind of on the horizon. But Easter Sunday is that wonderful opportunity to find different symbols, different artwork, different music, different expressions of who and what we're about now. It's at this stage where we are offered another way of being human. Not acting, but being human. Of stepping into. Okay? How often Jesus said when he healed people and they thanked him, he'd say, it's your faith that's healed you. Your faith. What was that about? Jesus was teaching, even through his behavior, through his miracles, I didn't do it. You're a beloved daughter, you're a beloved son like I am. What you did is, you stepped into this precursor, the Easter Sunday. You stepped in the new life that's already yours, just for the asking. St. Catherine of Siena, another doctor of the church, once had a vision. And in the vision, she saw Jesus standing in this room that looked like a treasure room. All these wonderful, wonderful gifts. And yet he looked sad. And Catherine says, Master, what are you sad about? And he pointed to everything behind him and he said, these are all the gifts that I yearn to give my people. But they don't ask and they won't receive them. Easter Sunday. Easter Sunday. If you grew up with a rag doll, that's fine with me, Lord. I'm okay with this. I'm all right. Okay? You don't need to give me anything else. Well, God wants to give you something else. And if you keep blocking it, then how are you going to receive the real gift that God has for you? The third step or stage on this journey of not only facing and confronting pain, but growing in compassion, is the 40 days of adjusting to this new reality. Okay? This is the time, remember, when Jesus rose from the dead, he then went about encouraging and talking to his followers, his disciples, the apostles. All right, this was his way of helping people to adjust the new reality. Okay, and let's face it, we recognize it to be true. Those who are involved in this field of study say that when change takes place amongst human beings, whether it's for the good or for the bad or anything in between, we respond almost identically. With fear, trepidation, anxiety. Maybe they won't like me. That's a promotion, you know? Or it's a move you've been dreaming about for years. But what if we don't like it? What if the winter is worse there than it is here? Oh, I don't know if I should have made the move and all that. So this 40 days is a significant period of time to get adjusted to the new reality. Compassion is deepened at this stage. If you have done this stage well, then you begin to give away what you receive, the fruit of the experience. In the scripture, it's called the pearls of wisdom. Okay, the gift that's been given to you, you realize that you can't keep it yourself. God's inviting you to share those pearls with others. So this is that sense of that compassion. I'm going to help you so you don't have to work as hard as I did. You see? And it's a way of sharing it with the other person. And you're enlivening them and deepening them and saying, well, at least I can avoid falling into the same pit you did. Okay? It's a way of learning from the others. It's a funny story about a rabbi, Protestant pastor, and a priest who really loved each other and spent their days off. But they loved to tease each other. One day they decided to do something different. They decided they wanted to go fishing. And so they went fishing, and as soon as they'd been out for a couple hours, the rabbi said, you know, I think I'm going to take a break. And with that, he stands up in the boat and kind of stretches, and he just steps over the boat into the water and walks the shore. And the Catholic priest, his mouth just falls. He said, I didn't realize he had that gift. My gosh, that's unbelievable. And the pastor saw what he did, and he says, you know, Bob's right. I think we ought to take a break. So with that, he too stands up, stretches, steps outside the boat, walks the shore. And the Catholic priest says, my gosh, how come they haven't told me this trick before? So he stands up and says, well, I'm not going to sit here by myself. And he says, besides, the fish aren't biting. He steps over the side of the boat and promptly falls in the water. And as he's kind of coming to the surface, getting for water, rabbi turns to the pastor and says, do you think we should tell him where the rocks are at? That's where the compassion comes. Is that we're letting people know where the rocks are at. Because we all fall down in the holes. Okay? Now, it's interesting. We do it for our children, grandchildren especially, but we're called to do it with our brothers and sisters in community. So this period is helping us to deepen in compassion, to see that it's not just, well, I feel sorry for you, poor slob, you fell in the water. It's here. Let me show you where the holes are, or let me show you where the stones are, so you can avoid the obstacles and you can live a life in freedom. The next one is the ascension. The ascension is a mystery that helps us to be able to rise above the conflicted feelings and thoughts we have about our past struggles. Okay? This takes a lot of work because they are conflicted feelings. For example, you've lost a loved one who maybe for 2 to 5 years has suffered greatly through a terrifying and terrible illness. Conflicted feelings, I'm glad they're no longer suffering. But gosh, I wish they were here. Oh, I feel so bad they're not here with me. What am I going to do? Okay. Recognizing that we're all going to die. Or we're all going to struggle with this. So this is the stage where we're invited to truly take on board. Good thing you're sitting down. Not going to throw any tomatoes. But you take on board what is the blessing of that painful experience. Repeat that. What is the blessing? We say in popular parlance, what is the silver lining in the challenge of this reality of my life? Okay? Maybe what you've discovered about yourself, and self-awareness is very important in the spiritual life. For Teresa of Avila, it's the first room in the interior castle. She says that's why so many people settle for mediocrity in the spiritual life, because they don't want to grow in self-awareness. So maybe the lesson is that you have survived. Or you can feel within you a deeper sense, a broadening or deepening of your soul. Or the idea would be that because you have gone through this suffering, you now have a lot more compassion for others. My youngest brother David was left paralyzed by a skiing accident. I honestly hadn't given much thought to people in wheelchairs and what it's like to go around in wheelchairs for most of your life or all your life. Okay? But working with him as his assistant for a month, it really changed my view. Reminded me of a friend of mine named Tom, who had just had a knee operation, and his brother came to pick him up in the hospital. And, of course, Tom was in the wheelchair, and his brother is standing there in the elevator, and this elderly couple comes on, and they won't look at Tom, so they turn to Tim. And they said to him, how's he doing? And Tom just smiled, you know. And Tim says, oh, he's fine. And carrying a whole conversation about Tommy sitting right there, you know. But we often do that with people. We treat people who are different than us differently. So this ascension helps, this is the mystery that helps us to say, well, what is the blessing, the insight, the gift that's been given to you through this terrible pain or not so terrible pain? What is it that you need to rise and bless you so that you can move forward? And that moves us to the last one, Pentecost. Pentecost is all about moving forward. It's about receiving the gift of the Spirit for the here and now. The here and now. So it's not like a general blessing from God. Rather, it's very specific. Praying for, seeking earnestly, where would you have me go with all of this? I'm not the same person. If I've gone through these steps, I am different. The word we use in Christian circles is, I've been converted. I see differently. There's been a metanoia experience. I'm not the same. Okay? And to see this as not only a passive, I wait on the Spirit, but an active involvement. You are given the presence of the Spirit in a new way. Can we say a deeper way or a fuller way? Because you have a greater capacity, because ideally, pain has opened you up or broadened you. Okay? For us as Christians, fully participating actively in each of these steps liturgically is what bonds us, builds community. We Catholics often say to each other, I don't know how people deal with death without having some sort of faith dynamic. Okay? So we go through these mysteries again and again each year as a community, faith community. But individually, we can go through them many, many times throughout the year. Sometimes simultaneously. One relationship, for example, you could be at the 40 days. Another relationship, Good Friday, it's falling apart. Another situation, for example, at work, you could be dealing with Pentecost. And so this is why we repeat these spiritual exercises liturgically to remind us again and again and again so that you have memorized it, that you don't give back what's been given to you. Rather, you give back something different, fuller, richer, more delightful, more fulfilling for the human community. Ideally, as we learn from Christ, suffering, tragedy, is meant to lead us to wisdom. To wisdom. To see God's presence in our life. Pain is meant to be an education in compassion. Not an education on beating our breasts and saying, poor me, nobody knows my suffering. If only they would. It's like, get over it. We all suffer. We all suffer. This is one reason why we see somebody in pain. We're often moved to tears as well. Because their fragility taps into our awareness of our own fragility. And why many people won't go to funerals. Or they won't go into hospitals to visit loved ones who have cancer or whatever. It's like, I don't want to catch it, even if it's not catchable. You know, it's like, I don't want to have to face that. That knowledge that I know I'm going to die or I'm going to suffer. Or that might be me. My 12-year-old, I mean my nephew Matthew, who's now 25, contracted Crohn's disease when he was 12. And I'll never forget what he said to me, I get this, at 12 years of age, when I asked him, how are you dealing with this? He said, well, Uncle Jim, he says, two ways. One is I talk to God a lot about this. Secondly is I watch my Uncle Dave, the one who was in the wheelchair, and I see how he's dealing with it. And he says, you know, I think I'm going to be okay. God's going to be with me. And it's been amazing how his life has continued to unfold in these last 12 years through this ongoing struggle with dealing with Crohn's disease. C.G. Jung once said, unless we carry our legitimate suffering, we are left with neurotic suffering. One more time. Unless we're willing to carry our legitimate suffering, the work downwards, notice that, we are left with neurotic suffering. Neurotic suffering very simply means repetitive, meaningless suffering. It's kind of like if you've been bitten by a spider or you've been bitten by a mosquito and for whatever reason you just can't deal with the itchiness and you keep scratching, 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 harder and harder and harder. Pretty soon, that little tiny bite is now a large welt. Everything around it is now red. And perhaps you've opened it up, it's become infected, and now you've got to go to the store and get something. You get the picture. That's what Jung is talking about. He is inviting us from a secular language to do what we Christians would call this. Because when we do this, it opens us up to compassion. Because the Spirit always sends us forth for the sake of others. It's never just about the individual. It's never just about the individual. If it were, then Jesus would have risen. He would not have come back to encourage, to affirm, to enlighten His followers, and He certainly wouldn't have left His Spirit. You see? So it's not about the individual. The work of the Spirit is always about sharing what's been given to you. So art, literature, theater, films, these are all created to raise us up and bring forth the best of humanity. And why Christian churches, communities are involved in these things is that we know that intuitively is that this is part of the language or a dialect within the human soul. And why even in the secular realm, people are moved to tears of compassion, tears of compunction, laughter and joy of delight about being alive, the foibles of being human, the shortcomings that we all struggle with. Okay? Maybe it's because I turned 60, but I'm sure getting a lot of jokes about turning older on the internet by my siblings and friends. But I'll tell you this, it's a reminder to us that either we weep or we laugh. Because it's the language of the soul when you have no words. Laughter is when you see the incredible beauty of life. When you delight in the mystery of what is. When you see that gift that not to take yourself too seriously. And tears are when you see the utter, unbridled truth of life. And this is why as we get older, we're meant to have this wonderful back and forth relationship with the two. Not to shun either one. This is why, for us as Christians, imagination is central to the compassionate life. Can you imagine helping another person? What would it look like for you? Can you imagine reaching out to a stranger? Can you even have this fantasy about what it would be like to stand in front of people to give your testimony, an experience of how you faced your pain, how you lived through it, okay? How you shared the pearl with somebody else? For us, we know intuitively that shared grief builds community. And it expands the soul because it reminds us that we all suffer. The Sunday after my brother David's accident, I'd flown up to Washoe Medical Clinic to be with him and the family. And then I had to fly home because I had the masses that Sunday and had other things I had to do. I'll never forget that 10 a.m. Mass at St. James. Because after the homily, as you can imagine, I incorporated all this that particular day in the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord, January 7th. I came out, an older gentleman walked up to me, put out his hand, and he said, "Thank you for sharing your grief." But then he really stopped me, and I could see his face had been tenderized, not just by my story, but by something else. And then he finished up by saying, "But at least you still have your brother." He said, "My son was killed in a car accident at 25 and he never came home. He just turned and walked away." So it was a double gift. It was a gift of gratitude that he reminded me that grief is given to us to be shared. And that's what deepens and builds community. And secondly, you're not alone. You're not alone in your grief. And it doesn't mean that we put judgments on, well, my grief is greater than yours. No, it is what it is. It puts it all in perspective. And why it's essential that we share that grief. Mother Teresa, Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta, once said, "There is so much suffering in the world, so much loneliness, because we've forgotten that we belong to each other." And God uses whatever comes into our life to bring us together, to remind us, in God's eyes, we're all God's family. Doesn't make any difference what our religion is. Doesn't make any difference what our political leanings are. It makes no difference what type of orientation we have. It makes no difference what age we are, what gender we have been gifted with. Go on and on and on. We're the ones that divide and conquer. Because it makes us feel like we're superior. We're better than. At least I'm not like them, whoever them is. God's eyes, no, we're all God's family. Mother Teresa saw this in her own experience, by dealing with the world's suffering. Accepting pain, the diminishments of life, your life, and death, this is the work of maturity. This is the work of an authentic human being. This is the work of building compassion. What this involves is an attitudinal and a behavioral adjustment, which then can create new pathways in the brain. We know this scientifically, that if we keep saying, feeling, doing something a certain way, it literally broadens the pathways. It becomes second nature. We often say that, oh, I can do this blindfolded. Okay? The reason we don't like to get out of our comfort zone is because we like it, because I'm in control. I don't have to think. I don't have to feel differently, to behave differently. I just put it in automatic. And yet, Jesus is constantly reminding us that getting out of our comfort zone is the only way to transformation, is the only way to grow in compassion. If you know, for example, that if you go to a certain freeway off-ramp, and there's always going to be those three homeless people, you know as well as I do, you're going to choose another off-ramp. Why? So you feel comfortable, you don't feel convicted, okay? Same with stores. We just try and maneuver our life, especially the older we get. But to build compassion means we have to step out of our areas of comfort and in a way say yes to the discomfort of life. Remember what Jesus said in Luke 6:36. Be compassionate as your Heavenly Father is compassionate. Become like your Creator, that you're not only moved by the suffering of others, but that you do your best to alleviate that suffering in whatever way. Again, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, blessed are the merciful. Okay? But the one that's at the core of the compassionate mystery in the tradition of Christianity is the story of the Good Samaritan. Okay? It's at the heart of this whole message of compassion. So here we have an unexpected twist in that the one who shouldn't have cared for the poor man who's been beat up, he's the one that becomes the hero of the story. We don't have enough time to continue to unpack all the wonderful elements, but I just want to call to mind one little caveat of the story. This man didn't just attend to the wounded pilgrim or traveler just for that time. He put him on his own donkey, went to the closest inn, and then said, you know, I'm going to be traveling back here next week or two. I'll check in on him. And if there's anything else, I'll be happy to cover it. That's a powerful message, because a lot of us think that it's in terms of charity, that we just attend to the immediate situation, thank God I'm done. Okay? So we talk about being Girl Scout or Boy Scout for the day. We talk about doing my good deed for the day. It's more than that. It's not just charity, it's about justice. Charity is a short term, justice is a long term. It's yes, it's about being concerned for the moment, but checking in. How's the situation unpacking? How's it unfolding? The suffering that we have experienced can help us appreciate the depths of other people's happiness. Because we've been there, maybe intimately. This is why it's important for us to revisit our past pain. Not so we can show our badges of courage or, look, I lived through it, they can live through it too. Rather, so it can alleviate other people's pain. That once again we revisit the lessons learned. And why in Christianity we say to leave the place of pain too soon is to leave the place of salvation, of healing. So this is why, for us, when Jesus was on the cross, he wasn't just there for 5 minutes. Okay, I'm done. Get me out of here. He was there for the full time. He was there and they even had to check on him. Is he really dead? Okay? So maybe you want to get off your cross because somebody else needs the wood. But maybe God is inviting you to stay there. Meditate on your pain. Embrace it more deeply. Learn the lesson so that you don't pass on the pain. My friend Richard Rohr has often said, if you do not transform your pain, you will transmit it. You will transmit it. At some level, and I save this for the end, at some level, from the mystical viewpoint, from the long view of Christianity, suffering becomes the gift, half understood. Our suffering can become an education and compassion for others because it teaches us that we are not alone in this cosmos. It teaches us that we are part of all creatures in the cosmos. That we share in this amazing dynamic of being a part of God's loving creation. At the same time, we're the bridge. God says, come and co-create with me. Come and recreate your life with me. Every time you say yes to this, you are opening up your essence to see who you really are. That you are like my son. That yes, you're human. You're called to be fully human. And at the same time, you are divine, like my son. To share in that nature. And that word may frighten you. Look at Hebrews 10 and 10. That is, you're sanctified. You're already made whole. You're already made. You're divinized. That word comes from the Greek Orthodox, the Orthodox tradition. So, can I have just 5 more minutes? Is that right? Because what I want to do is to give you 3 different practices that can help you to deepen compassion. Okay? 2 come right from Christian tradition, and 1 comes from the Buddhist tradition. I'm sure the Buddhist presenter has already mentioned this. But first one is a meditative practice. And it's very powerful. It's a practice whereby you close your eyes and you connect deeply with some experience where you feel loved, where you know, either with this relationship or this encounter, you just know you're loved. Okay? And you hold that feeling of love. Okay? And then what you do is, still with your eyes closed, is you project that love out. Okay? First, the person that is near and dear to you. Might be your spouse, for example, or your children, or your grandchildren. Then you start to reach out beyond your circle of concern. It'd be somebody, for example, that, you know, you're friends with. Not necessarily intimate friends, but you're friends with. It could be a neighbor, a coworker. Okay? The third level is somebody you're struggling with. See, what you're doing is you're pushing yourself beyond the comfort level. You're doing what Jesus teaches us. Love your enemies. Okay? So don't take on the whole world. Okay? Just take on those 3 different groups. And each morning it can shift. Okay? Or each evening whenever you do this. It doesn't take very long to do. 5-10 minutes. Okay? That's 1. Second one is follow the example of the Good Samaritan. This is a very, very common thing. Christian tradition, and that is when you're feeling down, when you're feeling overwhelmed with your pain and suffering, when you feel like, oh God, can it get any worse? Go and help somebody in need. Okay? I've been working with a woman in middle age. She's single. And being single, we single people often can think the whole world revolves around us. Okay? Those of you who have children, you know that's God, why God gives you children. Remind you, it doesn't revolve around you. It revolves around them. But she has just had a really tough year. A lot of it, to be honest, she brought in herself. But I just was talking to her driving here, and it turns out that God has a wonderful sense of humor. Because she, her whole time has been thinking, this is where she's at. Okay? And yet, with a precious gift this morning, God's revealed to her that actually she's here. And that is that because of her great love to her childhood friend, I won't go into all the details, she's agreed to become a foster mother, temporarily. While this young child named Angel, his parents work out some legal difficulties. But all legal by the state, the whole thing. She said yesterday morning, when the social worker came over and said, and there was the parent, says, okay, hand the baby over to Kathy. You're in charge. She said, my God, I never thought my life would turn this way. She doesn't want to get married, she doesn't want to have kids, but because of her compassion for her friend, she said yes to be a mother. Okay? So when you're feeling down and out, life isn't making sense, reach out to somebody else who has a more difficult struggle. It puts your struggle in comparison in a perspective. And finally, I would encourage you to take a look at any one, not all of them, but any one of these spiritual exercises. They too can help you develop compassion. Now, I'll warn you, these particular parts are in the Christian tradition, but you have to really do research. Because, as you hear them in a few moments, very often people were so afraid of them, they were not affirmed by the hierarchy as much as other practices for various reasons, but they're very powerful. You ready for them? First one, incorporate your imagination. Use your active imagination and imagine yourself growing in compassion. What that looks like. Specific things throughout your day. Specific relationships, specific encounters. Secondly, regularly practice rituals in your life. In times of transition or trauma or pain, I find that when I go through these stages, I use rituals and ritualizing behavior. They really help. If you want some more help with that, I encourage you to take a look at my book. You don't have to buy it, but look at it. You'll see it's there. Okay. Third one is dream work. When you're especially hard-headed, God will break through in your dreams. All I ask is you listen to them and work with them. Okay. In the Scriptures, it seems that most of the men, they got dreams and women got angels. Probably because we men could be more hard-headed. Who knows? But dream work can be very powerful. Even if you can't remember your dreams and you're struggling, you're stuck. When you go to sleep at night, just say, Lord, please speak to me through my dreams. And you'd be amazed when you wake up in the morning, you'll know exactly what you're supposed to do. You'll have a new insight, a new attitude. I just was this morning jogging with a friend of mine. He told me that he's a permanent deacon. He had just run his homily by his wife and said, it's perfect, don't touch a thing. And yet, at 2 a.m. that night, he was awakened. And he said, Jim, I don't know if it was a dream. I said, it was a dream, Jack. It was a dream. Okay. He got up, he went to his computer, he changed the whole thing. And he said, you know, the reason I tell you the story, he says, seven people came up to me after Mass on Sunday and said, that was the best homily ever given. He trusted the inner world. Now, this is a man who's a scientist, so he likes facts and figures, but he finally said, okay, I'm going to trust what Jim keeps telling me. Look at your dreams. Okay. Next one is art. We're all artists in different ways because we're created in God's image. God's the ultimate artist. But we're artists in different ways. So rather than judging yourself, let the art, the music, flow from the inside. Just focus on the color. Use your non-dominant hand, for example. Okay? Sing in whatever way you want. Write free verse poetry. Watch and see how whatever it is inside of you is developing a deeper compassion. A feeling with the pain of the world. I wrote a poem many, many years ago when I was in a time of great, great loneliness. And it just flowed. It just flowed. And I shared it a couple times with people who were also going, and they started crying. That's why artwork's helpful. Because you're putting into word or to symbol that which touches others. Another one is shadow work. Shadow work is the parts of your life that you do not want to look at, that you repress. The golden parts of your life and the dark areas that you just can't accept. Okay? To do that work is an area that can be so liberating. And I say this especially because we are living in the shadow of, at least right now, the Roman Catholic priesthood. Terrible, terrible dark time. And we're not through it yet. We've got a long ways to go. Okay? It's also the shadow of authority, power, okay, when it's gone out of control. All right? And the last one is creation. To be immersed in creation, letting the flora and the fauna speak to you. And you say, ah, yeah, wink, 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 New Age stuff. Well, the reason New Age has reclaimed this is because we've rejected it. Do you know in the medieval cathedrals in Europe, there were numerous animals in the buildings, in the artwork. We've gotten away from that because of our own bent towards just rationalism and pure science. But we bring the whole picture back. You see, these are powerful ways of reconnecting with the deep compassion not only of God, but the deep compassion yearning to truly see our unity in the cosmos. So let's take a break, and we'll come back and do some questions on that.